residential areas as Israeli forces demolished homes east of the city. The densely populated Buraij refugee camp in central Gaza was also shelled. Officials report that Israel has violated the truce over 490 times in just 44 days since the ceasefire was signed. Nearly 350 civilians have been killed since October 11th and nearly 900 others injured during this same period. The death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war since 2023 now stands at around 69,800, with the majority of victims being women and children. Bada Ibrahim is joining us now from Deir al-Bala in central Gaza to bring us up to speed on all the latest developments from the Gaza Strip. Qada, we know that the Israelis continue to violate the ceasefire with these constant attacks in continuation, effectively, of this genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. But also, in addition to that, is also hampering the entry of aid, which has caused a dire humanitarian catastrophe in the Gaza Strip. Tell us more, please.
Yes, exactly. The Israeli shelling and artillery shelling is continuous on the eastern bars of the Gaza Strip, the eastern bars of the areas that happen to be behind the so-called yellow line, in another violation of the ceasefire agreement. This morning, or a short while ago, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital here received one critical injury from an artillery shelling that targeted a group of people in the eastern part of Deir al-Balah city, and also in the eastern parts of Khan Yunis city, the outskirts of Al-Qarara and Beni Sahela are subjected to very heavy artillery shelling and also air strikes around the hour, as the Israeli occupation army is again subjecting or directly attacking these areas with heavy air strikes and with heavy artillery shelling and with also the gunfire from the Israeli warjets and from the Israeli drones in Rafah as well. The Israeli air strikes are continuous, particularly on the eastern parts of the same city, causing more damage of the very devastated city already. Again, in the eastern parts of Gaza City, the areas that happen to be behind the so-called yellow line happen to be subjected to very heavy artillery shelling around the hour and also detonations from the explosive-laden rockets that the Israeli occupation army is using on a daily basis in order to level to the ground what is remaining in these areas and the homes or the infrastructure that is still standing in the areas behind the so-called yellow line. So for most of the population, this period since the ceasefire started until now poses an extension to the Israeli genocidal attacks and an extension to the Israeli war that is not has not ended until this moment. Most of the people on the ground are telling and expressing their frustration that this genocide has not ended as the ceasefire went into effect. However, more every day that passes, more people are still falling victim to the Israeli attacks and more people are still falling victim to the humanitarian crisis and catastrophe that the people and most of the population nowadays are living since the beginning of the Israeli genocide and are still living even after the ceasefire went into effect. So we are talking about a very dire humanitarian situation coupled with the Israeli violations and violent attacks that continuously inflicting more casualties, more injuries, arriving to the overwhelmed hospitals of the Gaza Strip that are already experiencing shortages in all the aspects of life, from fuel to medical supplies to aid. In the hospitals of the Gaza Strip and the field hospitals are experiencing or having shortages in the medical supplies and in the fuel that is very, very vital for running the ambulances and the generators of the hospitals. And also the medical devices that the Israeli occupation army is still banning their entry even after the ceasefire went into effect. In the meantime, while we are talking about banning the entry of the medical devices, the Israeli occupation army is using another technique in order to deceive the public and to deceive the world about the situation here in the Gaza Strip. All of a sudden, the Israeli occupation army decided, or the Israeli regime decided, to allow entering the smartphones into the Gaza Strip. All of a sudden, we have these smartphones everywhere in the Gaza Strip. However, in the meantime, they are not allowing the entry of the most vital and the most life-saving devices like the CT devices and the basics of survival and the medical aid into the Gaza Strip, which is actually should raise serious question about the Israeli policies that is using again in the Gaza Strip. The Israeli occupation army, since the beginning of this ceasefire, we have been expressing this surprise about how the Israeli occupation is allowing the entry of accessories, allowing the entry of junk food and canned food. In the meantime, it is not allowing the entry of the most vital and the most life-saving materials and reconstruction materials and also the sheltering materials that most of the people are already in a very dire need to. This is actually highlighting how the Israeli occupation army is dealing with the situation here in the Gaza Strip, is manipulating the public and manipulating the mainstream media about drowning the streets and the markets of the Gaza Strip with these unnecessary items, in the meantime depriving the population of the life-saving materials and the most important materials like the sheltering materials and the painkillers, the medications and the life-saving medications that most of the people have been impatiently waiting for since this ceasefire started or went into effect.
All right, thanks a lot, Ghada Ibrahim, joining us from Deir Abala in central Gaza. Palestinian students in Gaza are bearing the brunt of the Israeli genocidal war and its violations of the ceasefire agreement. In Al-Loloa Al-Katami School in Gaza City, students attend classes in a makeshift classroom in the courtyard despite inadequate facilities, a shortage of textbooks, and classrooms lying in ruins. These children embrace education as a testament to their enduring spirit and their resilience in the face of the Israeli regime. Let's listen to some of the Gazans expressing their views on the issue.
With radiant smiles, we walked back into the educational center after 2 years of war. We had been longing for this moment, and today, students and parents alike were filled with enthusiasm. The smiles returned to our children's faces, smiles that had been absent for nearly 2 years. There are no uniforms, and textbooks are not what they once were. We are doing our best to provide study materials and special guides. The center is free, the education is free, but we still urgently need basic resources for our students, our teachers, and the administration.
I feel happy because I will learn and be more motivated. We suffered a lot during the Gaza war when school stopped, but we will learn at this school. It took me half an hour to walk to school, and most of the streets are damaged and full of rubble and stones, which exhausts me. The ceasefire makes me happy, but when the war comes back, I get very sad because there is no education, nothing, and no life in Gaza.
The Israeli military is set to monitor all regular soldiers' social media to prevent the exposure of sensitive information. The AI-based system called Morpheus scans text, photos, and videos posted by about 170,000 soldiers. Posts that violate security rules will prompt a deletion notice, and in urgent cases, soldiers may receive a direct call from an information security officer. The move follows reports that Hamas spent years gathering intelligence on Israeli bases and operation from soldiers' posts ahead of the Al-Aqsa flood operation in October 2023. The Hind Rajab Foundation is also monitoring soldiers' content, claiming it shows involvement in attacks on Palestinians and destruction in Gaza. It has collected over 8,000 pieces of evidence for international complaints. Well, towns and villages across the occupied West Bank are once again under the Israeli raids. Regime forces attacked civilians and arrested them, as many of them were seriously wounded. In one of the assaults, the IOF abducted more than 125 Palestinians in the city of Tubas. Our correspondent, Nava Hamid, has more.
The military aggression against Tubas, the five pillars or the five stones, as the Israeli forces have called this military operation, is entering its second day. More than 125 Palestinians have been abducted and arrested. 20 of them has been set free, and the others are still being held all through the hours of the night, where the Israeli forces are making their way door to door in the areas, in the five targeted areas, Tubas, Tammun, Aqaba, Tayassir, and Al-Far'a refugee camp. The Palestinian Red Crescent, and according to local resources, have announced that 25 injuries, beating injuries, have happened inside Tubas, where those Palestinians have been held by the Israeli forces, and then they were beaten and assaulted by the Israeli forces through this ongoing military operation. Not only in Tubas, the situation is expanding and the situation is worsening, actually, but in the province of Tul Kerem, military vehicles have been going into the city and, of course, to take down and to demolish even more homes of whatever is left from the refugee camps.
The British government is facing an unprecedented courtroom battle as Palestine Action's co-founder Huda Amouri launches a judicial review into the Direct Action Group's proscription under the Terrorism Act. It's a first challenge of its kind with far-reaching consequences. We have more in this report by Said Puruza.
Pro-justice demonstrators supporting Palestine Action's co-founder Huda Amouri taking the British government to court in the first ever judicial review of a proscribed group.
This is the culmination of a really concerted effort and a campaign over about 5 years to completely crush protest laws in this country, which means completely crush the fundamentals of democracy in this country.
Over 3 days, the High Court is examining whether the British Interior Ministry, known as the Home Office, followed lawful procedure when banning the group in July this year. Last month, the government tried but failed to block the case altogether.
I'm appalled at the fact that genocide, the crime of crimes, is being swept under the rug in favor of the British state's geopolitical and economic interests. And we're familiar with this. I mean, obviously, I'm coming from Germany, where we are the German government is the second largest weapons deliverer to Israel. And the British state also has, the British Empire has interests that they are looking to protect. They are threatened by Palestine Action and by nonviolent direct action.
The hearing follows nationwide civil disobedience. The outcome of this court battle will have consequences for thousands of campaigners like these arrested for holding up these signs. Before the ban, which was issued under terrorism legislation, Palestine Action had targeted the UK-based sites of Elbit Systems, Israel's largest weapons manufacturer. They also sprayed red paint into the engines of two military planes they accused of refueling aircraft involved in Israel's genocidal war on Gaza.
The prescription has come because of a lot of pressure from outside interests, the military-industrial complex, political lobbyists, military lobbyists, both internally to the UK and externally.
The activists who carried out those actions are held in remand. Six are now on an open-ended hunger strike.
It can't be denied that this is all part of the same fight and it's all inextricably linked together. If the deprescription appeal is successful, then it will prove to everybody that this is not a terrorist organization, and there's no justification to keep people held in prison without trial on terrorist charges.
In a dramatic last-minute twist, the judge adjudicating the case was replaced with a three-judge panel, including one that voted in favor of the UK sales of the F-35 parts to Israel, fueling accusations of a stitch-up among campaigners. Beyond the legal arguments, the campaigners here say this case exposes something deeper, and that is the length to which the British government is prepared to go to protect the Israeli regime and its interests, even if that means stretching the law to silence those who challenge them. Said Puruza, London.
Iran reiterates that it reserves the right to pursue all legal avenues to hold the U.S. and Israel accountable for the 12-day war on the country. Tehran asserts that it seeks full reparations for damages caused by the acts of aggression. In a letter to the U.N. Security Council, Iran's ambassador Amir Saidi Ravani said Israel's acts of aggression carried out in coordination with the United States violated Iran's sovereignty and territorial integrity. He stressed that the airstrikes constituted a clear breach of the UN Charter targeting civilians and civilian infrastructure. Iravani cited a statement from the U.S. Air Force confirming its involvement in attacks on safeguarded Iranian nuclear facilities. He added that these disclosures, along with remarks by the U.S. president, demonstrate Washington's pivotal role in the war. The envoy emphasized that the United States is obligated to provide full compensation for the material and moral damages suffered by Iran and its citizens. He called on the UN Secretary General and the Security Council to bring all of the perpetrators to justice. Well, the Iranian foreign minister says a prisoner exchange with France has been finalized and will take place soon. Abbas Araghchi said negotiations for the swap are fully complete, with both sides now awaiting the completion of judicial processes. Speaking to France 24 in Paris, he indicated that the exchange could occur within the next 1 or 2 months. Araghchi confirmed that Iran's Supreme National Security Council has approved the exchange and that Tehran is fully prepared. He and his French counterpart met in Paris on Wednesday to discuss the swap. The exchange involves Iranian university lecturer Mahdi Esfandiari, who was arrested in France in February over her pro-Palestinian views. She was granted conditional release and is currently at the Iranian embassy in Paris. Two French citizens arrested in Iran on espionage charges in 2022 were also granted conditional release earlier this month and are now at France's embassy in Tehran. That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brother and sister, Salamun alaikum and welcome to a new episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Thank you for choosing this program to listen to. And inshallah, this program would be beneficial for you. Today, we're going to speak about modern idolatry.
Yourself, can't you see this wonder spread in front of you? The clouds floating by, the sky so clear and blue, planets in their orbits, the moon and the sun, such perfect harmony. Let's start questioning ourselves, isn't this proof enough for us?
Today is 6th of Jamadi Uthani, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 6th of Azar, 1404 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 27th of November, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. From chapter Al Imran, verse 173, we'll listen and then we come back to the studio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم الذين قال لهم الناس إن الناس قد جمعوا لكم فاخشوهم فزادهم إيمانا وقالوا حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل.
Those to whom hypocrites said, "Indeed, the people have gathered against you, so fear them." But it merely increased them in faith, and they said, "Sufficient for us is Allah, and He is the best disposer of affairs."
La ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The enemy, propagating agents, and some simple-minded and coward people advisingly inspire that a group of enemies is strong and none can combat them, so it is better not to entangle yourself with fight. The true believers, without any fear, and as they are qualified in the verse, calmly answered them. So the strongest barrier against all the threats of the enemy is faith and trusting in Allah. When a believer happens to be afflicted with disasters, he increases his reliance with Allah.
Life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you to doubt you would be the worst mistake? Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light, you guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong. That often lies, 'cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
today we're going to speak about modern idolatry. Sometimes Tawhid or monotheism isn't lost because people don't understand it, but because they're afraid of failure, fear of not increasing sales, fear of outselling competitors, fear of insecure business prospects. Ultimately, people choose instant guarantees over true trust. Let's be honest, this practice is commonplace around us, from small businesses to establish oneness. They attach amulets to cash registers, place lucky numbers on display cases, or follow certain ritual to boost sales. All of this is disguised as just extra, just to boost motivation, or a business traditional passed down through generations.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Ali, your host. Today we are going to talk about modern idolatry in 2025. If authentic Islamic teachings are not properly introduced, false ideas will take their place. People naturally seek spiritual connections. If told something is connected to divine knowledge, they accept it easily. Feng Shui has changed through time and cannot be trusted. Yet it thrives because it meets people's emotional needs. To continue bringing the votes and ideas and views of the other scholars in ground, we need to know that Feng Shui's emphasis on order and cleanliness closely mirrors Islamic teachings that have for centuries recommended purification of living environment, moderation and balance. Feng Shui's claim of improving happiness or sadness is simply a repetition of Islamic principles in another form. Islam emphasized simplicity and balance long before Feng Shui existed. Avoiding unnecessary possessions and maintaining a clean environment were underlined by the Imams 1,000 years ago. And then we have to know that ugly or animal-like statues may negatively affect the subconscious and disturb children's emotionally. The use of dog heads, frogs, or mice figures brings only anxiety and fear, not benefit.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every part.
Today's special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the end of time.
Showing off in worship or riyah is one of the hidden ways of committing shirk. Now we listen more. Some people do acts of worship to impress others instead of pleasing Allah. Examples include praying extra long when others are watching, giving charity to gain praise, or reciting Quran loudly to show off. Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, warned, "The thing I fear most for my ummah is minor shirk." Worship should be only for Allah, not for human praise. Suggest some ways to protect ourselves from shirk. Think about them. One of them is trusting Allah completely. True tawakkul means using the means but believing that only Allah controls the results. Take your medicine, apply for your job, save your money, but your heart should depend only on Allah, not on the means. When we rely too much on people, objects, or plans, we slowly replace Allah's place in our hearts. The other way is reminding ourselves daily that Allah is sufficient for me and He's the best disposer of affairs. You can find this verse from the Holy Quran, chapter 3, verse 173.
So Allah Azza wa Jal, He wants to treat this arrogance that we human beings have through sujood. And this arrogance can only be treated by placing our forehead on the dust directly. Don't put a barrier between your forehead and the dust, the turba or the earth. Because the carpet will not give you that same result. Now that we understand the first reason, the Imam goes to the second reason. And the second reason the Imam tells Hisham ibn al-Hakam, remember in the hadith when he asked him, on what things can I do sujood? The Imam told him, on the earth and whatever is grown from the earth. And then Hisham asked him why. He said, because number one, if you pray on the earth directly, this will help you in becoming humble. Number two, the Imam told Hisham ibn al-Hakam, he said, because the people, they worship these items. The carpet is what? Man-made. And human beings, they worship man-made items. What the Imam basically is saying during salah, during sujood, you want to put all your focus and concentration on what? On Allah. That's why when you do sujood on something natural, created by Allah. Don't do sujood on something that is man-made, because it will remind you of the dunya. When you place your forehead on the carpet, this will remind you on the dunya. This will distract you from Allah Azza wa Jal. And the human being is distracted so easily. So if you don't want to be distracted, place your forehead on the dust that Allah created. It's not man-made. And then the Imam says, human beings, they worship their food and their clothes and whatever is man-made. Why? How do people worship them? The Imam means that they are so devoted to their desires more than they are devoted to Allah Azza wa Jal.
Dear brother and sister, we open a new chapter here, and that was about modern idolatry, one of the great and important phenomena in modern life. I think it's better to continue this interesting topic on the next episodes of today's special from IRIB English Radio. So be with us, and till then, we leave you in Allah's mercy. Fi amanillah.
لا إله إلا الله الله ربي محمد نبي علي إمامي لا فتى إلا علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي لا إله إلا الله الله ربي محمد نبي علي إمامي لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Our researchers whose work quietly shapes the future of how machines see and understand the world. They bridge the gap between abstract algorithms and real-world applications, pushing boundaries in fields like deep learning, computer vision, and intelligent document processing. My guest today is one such innovator, an academic and practitioner whose contributions span both cutting-edge research and impactful industry collaborations. With a passion for pattern recognition and a commitment to advancing AI education, he continues to inspire the next generation of scientists and engineers. Welcome to SORP, I am Bahman Ray.
Yusri Kesentini is an associate professor at the Digital Research Center of ESFAX in Tunisia, where he leads the Deep Vision research team. With a PhD in pattern recognition from the University of Rouen, France, and an engineering degree from the National Engineering School of ESFAX, his work centers on deep learning, computer vision, and document image processing. He has authored over 60 publications and actively collaborates with industry on technology transfer projects.
Dr. Yusri Kesentini, very good to have you on this program.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm honored to be with you today. Thank you.
It's a great pleasure, actually, to have you here in Iran as well. What are some, if you are going to mention some key milestones or breakthroughs you have achieved in document image processing?
Yeah, I participate in many competition, international competition. For example, in my PhD, I have participated in a competition on Arabic handwriting, Arabic recognition, and I have I was ranked in top three, I think, with my system. Giving that participant is of high level. There is Google, there is some big company.
From the time that you were a student, or is it after you had come back to Tunisia?
No, this is, was in my PhD, when I conduct my PhD. And now we continue to work, for example, in named entity information extraction from documents. So we have also participated in a challenge how to extract some information from records, marriage records, for example, historical marriage records. And here there is a transcription stage, and we need to combine with NLP, natural language processing techniques, to understand the text and extract some named entity like name of person, locations, dates. Here also we are ranked in top one in this competition. We have some interesting for document enhancement. Also, we compare our result using generative artificial intelligence. We have working with GAN, generative adversarial networks, diffusion models, and we have very good results that are compared to the best results in the world in these applications.
And have you ever, your research, has it ever involved AI and translation Because that's also my field, and I want to know.
Yeah, we don't work on translation, but translation, I think, can be as a post-processing after the transcription. If we get the text, we can after use some NLP tools to transcribe the model to other the output, the text to other language.
So it would be a good idea to work on that together.
Yeah.
I'm trying to steal you and your expertise for my own studies. Very good. Yeah. And tell me something. How did you begin working with industry partners on technology transfer projects?
Yeah, this is the idea of our research center. When we create our research center, because before in Tunisia, most research laboratory work just to publish the result of their PhD in some conference, some journals. But we take a decision in our research center that we think that research must impact our socio-economical environment. And we start, this is a strategy that we have adopted, that we need to collaborate with companies to do this. And we started, in the beginning it was difficult because it is not common to collaborate between researcher and company. So the first project was difficult to convince the partner to work on with the researcher on this kind. But after, when they see the success of the project, and it become more easy. And now we have many, many projects with company because we are now known that our Deserter Center work with high quality with company. So it is more easy to be involved in this kind of projects.
So you kind of provided the industry with the missing link so that you kind of facilitated future research.
Exactly.
That's very interesting, Doctor. Yeah, very good. And, of course, it's a pleasure to have you here because you were part of the, as I said, the sixth edition of Mostafa Prize. The scientists from all over the Islamic world get together every year, and that's a pleasure to have you as one of them here on SOAP, on our show.
Thank you.
Very good. Tell me something. What do you enjoy most about mentoring students?
Yeah. It's a good work, I think. I like it because sometimes we have some students, some PhD students that come without any knowledge in artificial intelligence, in document images, and we need to coach them to have sometimes many skills to conduct their PhD. Our goal in the Digital Research Center is not only to publish. It's the most important is not the quantity of how many publications, but the quality. So we try to publish in high quality conference and journals. So there is a ranking of conference and review. Most of our publication are in Q1 journals, ranked journals, and A-class conference. So we try to improve the quality. And this is amazing because you see how the PhD student improve his skills month after month. For the supervisor is a great result also. When my PhD student come to his end of the PhD, it is a pleasure for me also because I see the results of works of how many years concretized in this day.
And it basically becomes part of your journey.
Yeah.
And of course, your research center has had so many collaborations with commercial applications. Can you name some of the most important, significant examples of those?
Yeah. In the Deep Field Vision team, we work on document image, but not only document image. So we work on different multimedia data. So we work on satellite images. This is in the context of smart agriculture. So we work on monitoring of olive tree in Tunisia, because Tunisia is very famous by olive tree. We have large crops of olive tree.
Black and green?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we are the third producer of oil, olive oil, in the world. Wow. In Tunisia. So we need to provide some artificial intelligence tools for monitoring these crops, for detect some disease, for to control irrigation. So this is also part of our works. We work also on scene images in context of video surveillance, for example, how to detect persons, how to detect license plate in the vehicle, in Tunisian vehicle, and recognize them after. So we have many, many projects in these different application of images.
Very pragmatic.
Yeah.
They are, of course. And, of course, how has your role as an NVIDIA DLI instructor and an ambassador shaped your outreach efforts?
Yeah, I'm NVIDIA instructor and ambassador since 2018.
Okay.
To be instructor, there is many steps that you need to conduct with NVIDIA to be sure that you have the skills to be instructor. And as an instructor, I deliver many training sessions for student, for academic, for industrial, also in Tunisia. It is a training session, generally of today, on different topic of artificial intelligence. It is a certified training. So it means we use a platform of NVIDIA. All the work is in the cloud of NVIDIA. And the final step, there is an assessment that participant must conduct to get their certificate. So. This is the goal of
Right. Well, Dr. Yusri Kesantini, I wanted to continue the conversation, but I got the cue that we have to end because of time. Like to really thank you for being with us, but towards the end of the show you always get like a couple of minutes to talk directly to our audience, so for these 1 or 2 minutes our audience are going to become yours.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm very happy to be with you in Iran. It is a very interesting opportunity to participate to the Mostafa Awards, because we connect with Islamic researcher. It is very interesting, I think. I hope that I come back to Iran many, many other times.
Of course, we hope the same thing happens, and we'll see you back many times. Thank you so much for your time, Doctor.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for sharing this time with us. Until next time, it's goodbye from me, Bahman Rai.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
The Dimensions of Hazrat Fatima's Personality, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, February 19th, 2018. Hazrat Fatima Zahra alayha salam was also a very courageous lady who accompanied the noble prophet in 30 wars. She was also well aware of her rights and whenever necessary stood up for them instead of suffering like a helpless victim. These qualities are also well reflected in the lives of her great children, Imam Hussein, Imam Hassan and Hazrat Zainab and Kulthum. Who are also well known for their piety, goodness, courage, and generosity. Hazrat Fatima alayha salam inherited the genius, wisdom, determination, willpower, piety, patience, knowledge, and nobility from her illustrious father, both in words and deeds. Her generosity and compassion for the poor was such that no destitute or beggar ever returned from her door unattended. Thus, we can see now, in a short span of her life, this grand lady demonstrated how a woman can play different roles powerfully and positively influence the course of history by her social contribution. Let us conclude this discussion with a saying from Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh. We must all try to follow in the footsteps of Hazrat Fatima alayha salam and should try to learn from her piety and knowledge, especially since Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has not limited knowledge to only a few, but has made it available for all seekers. Also, each and every individual can attain to high degrees of piety, a quality that is again not limited to the elite. Lady Fatima alayha salam. She was an exemplary woman who, although lived a short time and departed earth as a young lady, is a role model for all zealous, devout Muslim men and women and even non-Muslim people who are familiar with her prestigious position. We should follow Fatima's lead. During the life of Fatima alayha salam, there is one point that we should consider. Here, we will not question the degree of her spiritual position and knowledge. We're not even capable of comprehending the spiritual greatness of Fatima alayha salam. In fact, at the top of human spirituality and perfection, only God knows and understands the high level of such individuals and others at their level. Thus, Fatima alayha salam is only known to her husband, her great father Muhammad, peace be upon him and his progeny, and her pure children. The people of her time, of other times, and we in this era are not able to recognize the brilliance and splendor of her spirituality. The bright light of spirituality is not detectable by everybody's eyes. Our short-sighted and weak eyes are unable to see the luminosity of humanity in these great personalities.
Allah, I wanna thank you. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.